We are the mothers of many, Kiara Evans and Lorna Blanchard. As mothers of many children, we are curious about our parenting journeys. We were called to document this poignant time of mothering in our lives. We feel passionately that women's stories should be heard.
I mean, okay, reparenting. I had the most profound conversation with CJ about reparenting yesterday.
Like, tell me more.
I mean, I wanted to weep. I've wanted to just weep thinking about it every time. I might check with him that he's okay with me sharing all of this. I think it would be fine. So we were talking about, how did we get onto it? We were talking about reparenting and it was something along the lines of I'll cut all of that out. Sorry, I'm just trying to think. Like, there's been a lot of conversations over the last few days in our house. We were sat down and we were talking about my issues with food and the voices that you hear, you know, the kind of external voices of, we called it patriarchy as part of the conversation, but also other women saying things to you and social media influences saying, you know, you should do this, you should do this, blah, blah, blah. Your worth is dictated based on this. And CJ was like, I don't get it. I don't hear that voice. I don't. And part of that is because he's not really on the socials in the way that I am. And I think part of that is because I use it for work. So we got talking about it and I was like, well, that voice for me, that negative voice, is pretty permanent and it does come from a variety of sources. And my issue is that I hear my own voice and then I hear it in contradiction with all the other voices and I then don't trust my own voice. And he doesn't get that because he hears his own voice and he goes, I know what to do because I can trust myself. And so I said to him, like, where the heck has that come from? That trust in yourself, where has that come from? Because that to me is like the ultimate goal that almost every self-help book that I've read recently is trying to achieve for people, is trying to figure out that voice to trust yourself. And so then we were talking about how he has his experience of childhood was pretty fucked up. He lived in Northern Ireland. He grew up in Larne, which was a Protestant town, and he was a Catholic. His dad worked for the British Army. So, and that was during the Troubles. So it was like properly fucked up. And his experience of growing up, this is what he described to me yesterday. His experience of growing up was that he was not accepted anywhere. Nobody, no organization, no nothing, no friendship group, nothing fully accepted him for who he was. And so he remembers from, I think he said consciously he remembers it from about 11 or 12, but it was probably building from earlier, that he figured out that his only safe space was himself, his own head. And that it didn't matter what other people thought, because they didn't accept him no matter what. They probably didn't think that he was right no matter what. They probably thought he was wrong. And so for him, he needed to be sure for himself that he had full integrity based on the information that he had at the time with whatever decision it was that he had to make or whatever he wanted to say, because he needed to accept himself because no one else was going to. And I was like, holy fuck, like, that's incredible. And also deeply sad that that's come from a place of a kid going, I don't feel safe anywhere apart from my own head. And yet that's what adults are trying to achieve constantly. And we were talking about it and saying, is it that almost his absolute not being welcomed anywhere was extreme enough that he could go to that place? Whereas for someone like me, you've got like little tidbits of, oh yeah, you're welcomed and loved, but only if. And it's like a totally different upbringing. And so then we kind of came to, we were talking about like the idea of reparenting, and that that's what I needed to do for myself, was to get to a place of reparenting. So when all of those voices come crashing in, I can parent in that moment for myself. Whereas maybe for him, he didn't have to, he's not got to learn to reparent because he's just been his own parent for the whole time. He just had to do that for himself the whole time since he was very, very little. Yeah, big.
Yeah, these are very big conversations you've been having in your house.
I know. And we weren't even drunk.
That's always good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have a few people in my life that have had similar-ish experiences of having to parent themselves from a very young age, in that other things, maybe not exactly the same things, but similar-ish things have happened to them, and therefore they've had to rely on themselves to fix what the adults were not capable of doing. And I don't necessarily think that that means that there is no space for reparenting in that, but more it's the opposite to what you were describing for the reparenting. So the reparenting for you looks like what?
Reparenting, I don't really know. I think I'm very new to the concept of reparenting. I mean, I've heard about it for a while, but I don't know that I've practiced it very much. I think probably for me, the reparenting comes in when I, in particular, when there's kind of wonky or tricky situations that have come up, or just which at the moment is like, you know, of the basics of life as well as more complicated things. Inner me, you know, my aligned self says, let's do this thing. And then the anxious part of me, or the angry part of me, or the scared part, or the voices that are external to me come in and go, how about do something self-destructive? Or how about let's do it a different way? And actually, I think for me, reparenting in those moments means, what are the feelings we're having? And what are we going to do about it to get to doing the thing that's actually aligned to you, that you, your inner self does actually know the answer. You're just shutting that shit down, and we need to get back to her.
So your voice says, your parenting conditioned voice says, don't rely on yourself. And yeah, your partner's, your husband's voice says, only rely on yourself.
100, literally, that is exactly the difference between me and CJ. Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that neither or both or whatever, it's all about perspective. Your own perspective needs shifting, like if you're okay with that. But if we're talking in the sense of a trauma response, not having a degree in psychology, I would say that if you are very fixed on either of those, there's room there to like question why.
I think that was kind of the conclusion that he and I both came to, was actually both are a trauma response.
Yeah.
The product of upbringing.
I feel like I have a mixture in me of those voices.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So tell me about your voices, the voices that, and what reparenting is for you.
Well, the last like few days, I would say that I've been having a lot of self-doubt come up after we recorded, and then like a few things have happened that have really made me question what I'm capable of and what my value is, and lots of like really big things, but they're not, hasn't like overwhelmed me. They've just been like in the background. So I'd say that that is shifting me into the space of like, don't rely on yourself, because what the hell do you know? But I know that for certain, I've been in a space for quite a long time of only rely on yourself, because like you have to take care of you, because no one else is going to do it, in a very closed down way, rather than a, okay, let's take responsibility, because we all know that we take responsibility for ourselves. And I very much am down for that, that my happiness and well-being and everything is to do with how I feel about myself and me taking care of myself. But for me, in a loving space, that is being in a community and that being part of that, rather than it just being down to like, I've got this and I am not letting anyone else get me off my path of being okay. So I definitely have experienced both. And I'd say that I go to different ones of those depending on where I'm at. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a collection of experiences, in my opinion. So my collection of experiences was maybe a little bit more varied and probably less severe than what you guys have been through. My experience of childhood was not really extreme and more very, very loving, very, my parents were very engaged and they didn't have the emotional language that we have now. So I wasn't taught emotional language. I wasn't maybe asked to reflect deeply on my feelings. Like that wasn't a thing in the 80s, not in my family and not in most families, I don't think. I think there's some, maybe some 60s hippies left over that were still, you know, the new age crew who were very much doing that. But I think it's quite a new thing for it to be common to really ask children, like, what are you feeling and why? So I think my experiences were not severe for the most part, and more little things that built up that went uninvestigated. So if I, like, because I'm quite in tune with my children's emotions and emotional well-being, I can tell if there's something that has come up a couple of times that they're not, that I don't understand why they're feeling that way and they don't know how to deal with the feeling, that will then something will click in me to go, okay, we need to just have a little look into this. Like, why are you feeling left out? Or why are you not feeling valued? What in yourself is not feeling valued that means that you're displaying this behavior? Because often children's behavior is reflective of how they feel. So I can pick up on that because I have the skills, I have the toolkit, which our parents, pretty much none of them had, because it wasn't common to read books on self-therapy or anything like that. So I think maybe when I go to those two places, it's not necessarily in an extreme way. I'm able to like notice it and it doesn't lead me down a path of very, very self-destructive behaviors. Would you say that you have a different experience when you go into that space of don't rely on yourself?
Like, I just hit the self-destruct button. Really, if things are really bad and the inner voice is screaming, like, do this or don't do this, it can, yeah, the self-destruct button can be really easily pushed. And I think at least right now, the place in my kind of understanding of all of this is I'm at least seeing it for what it is, the self-destruct button being pushed. Yeah, I think the other thing that I kind of was, we were talking about over the weekend and in terms of reparenting, and we just briefly talked about it before hitting record, is for me, perhaps the reason why I've struggled with the idea of reparenting and actually being able to kind of help myself through all of the difficult things that come up on a day-to-day basis without hitting the self-destruct button, is because I think up until really, really, really recently, I've wanted to be parented still. I've wanted to abdicate responsibility for my own self because it's too heavy for me. I didn't feel I had the tools. I didn't feel equipped to parent myself, especially alongside my own children. And because I had these feelings, these things were too big and too scary. And I think honestly, yeah, this is really honest. I was desperate for my mum to knock on my front door and say, I'm here. I've got you. I love you. It's all going to be okay. I'm going to fix everything. That's what I wanted. And the bottom line is that's not going to happen. But that's on me to release that need. And it's on me to kind of go, like you're saying, take responsibility. Okay, I need to take responsibility for the fact that that's what I felt I needed. And yet, if I want to like be a grown up and own my own life, it's time to do that, to take responsibility and go, hold on, I'm not a kid anymore. I don't need someone to knock on my door and tell me that they're gonna sort it all out for me. I've got this. And that to me is reparenting. And I've only just kind of like clicked on that one. I've only just gone, oh shit, that's what I wanted for the whole time. And it's not even a case of saying it's not gonna happen from that person. It's a case of saying, I release myself and that person from the need to give that to me. I'm okay with that now. Like that feels different now.
No, yeah. It's not shutting down the opportunity for that no. to be a conversation.
Exactly.
It's just you're not waiting for it to happen and not right. being able to live your life.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not stopping myself from stepping into my own role as a grown-up, looking after my own self. You know, I can do this. I can
and
do
therefore,
this.
That then ties into your confidence when you're parenting your kids, right?
Right, because I, at a core level, need to flick the switch from asking externally for someone, my parent, to say to me, I believe in you. You've got this. You're right. You're doing it right. You're worthy, to I need to say that to myself. I believe in me. I've got this. I am worthy. I am lovable. No matter what. And that confidence can then spill out into my decisions.
And yeah. This is what's coming up for me. When you were talking about your mother coming to the door and giving you her unconditional love in whatever shape or form that may have taken or not taken, that triggered my inner child to be like, I don't need you to tell me that. Like, I'm good. And actually, like, the thought of my mum doing that makes my skin crawl a bit.
Wow. Because
to me, that's her. To me, that feels threatening to my self-preservation, which I guess is more erring on the side of me. To someone to show me that kind of unconditional loving embrace for no reason other than just because they feel that way about me creates me my inner child to be triggered, and less so now, like as I'm becoming more heart-centered, I can see that people can just genuinely love you for the way you are without any condition whatsoever. But that definitely is still, I don't know what I would do if my mum actually did that. Because I believe that she would say it, like if I asked her to. If I asked her, like, mum, can you tell me that you would love me unconditionally no matter what? Because I say it to my kids. I know that she would say it to me and my dad too. But I don't want them to.
So you know that they would say it. Do you believe that they do love you unconditionally? And you don't have to answer that.
No, that's fine. My inner child does not. But me now, as an adult, yes. But this, so we have quite a, there's a divide between, so for me, there's the people that we all were when I was, say, 7, and then there's the people that we are now and the experiences we've had over the last 37 years together. So the people we were at age 7 maybe wouldn't like necessarily think that I would believe them from that perspective. If they'd told me that when I was 7, then yes. But now, as an adult, yes, I believe that they would love me unconditionally, because there's been conversations been had in our family over the last few years where that's now very clear maybe I don't need them to say it because it is very clear, or maybe the trigger is not necessarily about the actual saying of the thing. Mm. The trigger is about how I feel about myself.
So when you said that they would love you unconditionally for no reason, is that it? Is part of it like the conditioning that we all have of love is only here if you do well, you look nice, you do this thing, you're pleasing, you're good, whatever. And I don't know, and that's not to kind of like lay blame at our parents. That's just a case of saying, isn't that how children were raised, are still, you know, even in the school system now, that's still how we're trying to raise children, is to kind of go, you're only worthy if. And to me, I wrote down earlier on, reparenting is about growing up, but also seeing my own intrinsic worth, my own intrinsic value, and my own self-sovereignty. That's what reparenting is. And that can't be with conditions, because I'm going to change and I'm never going to be the same as I am today. And actually today, you know, I did my normal long run, and I ran a bit faster than I did last week on my long run, but a bit slower than my PB, and it was really hard and I felt really tired, and yet I'd eaten my toast beforehand, so I shouldn't have felt tired. And I instantly went to the place of, well, let's beat myself up over this one. Well, that's not seeing intrinsic worth. That's seeing my worth based on my running statistics. That's silly.
Yeah, but the very fact that you know that that isn't how you value your worth is the stepping stone to...
Yeah, totally a stepping stone. And that is that it? Like that, yeah. You know, that how do we reparent ourselves without those conditions?
Well,
and how do we, yeah.
I think it's noticing, like you just said, for starters, like where stuff's coming up, that obviously some things have happened to me that mean that boys, men, male dominance of any kind, through my perspective, if I feel in any way threatened by my power being taken away by a boy or a man, then I feel triggered. So that to me says, okay, well, let's dive down into the childhood, what went on. So I've been watching Ivy play football for the first time, actual games. I was talking to Gary about it. I was like, the first game I watched, I literally couldn't stop crying, just sobbing, because I was watching these young women playing football. Like, that wasn't even a thing when I was a kid. You didn't see women playing football. You didn't see women playing football on the TV. And you definitely, I never saw any of the girls in my school play football. They played netball. They played hockey. They did like girly things, you know? So just seeing, which I, by the way, don't think those things are girly, and being glib. But just seeing her in that context with all these other women cheering her on from the sideline, I was a mess the first time. And I'm a mess when I talk to Gary about it, because I'm like, this is so healing bits of my inner child that says, well, you're not a boy, so you can't do that.
Mm.
So part of the, it's all like a massive map for me of like taking you back to the experience via the means of the trigger, whether you want to go there or not. Sometimes I don't want to go there and I'm like, yep, triggered, don't care, boys suck. Move
yeah,
on.
Yeah, totally. It keeps coming back to that intrinsic value and that kind of dignity of each person individually. Like, of course you can play football because you want to move your body to play football. Okay, cool. It shouldn't matter what. I think that's it. Like, there shouldn't be conditions on people in that way. That's really hard though, isn't it, to let go of all of those conditions and actually really believe in your own worth. That's bonkers.
Because we're talking about it in a context too of a marriage and as a mother of four kids. So we're talking about it in this like context of all these other things going on at the same time. So for example, when I was a mess about the football, I wasn't crying openly on the side of the pitch because there was like 30 other parents there. I had my three other kids running around. I was holding back the tears. I wasn't releasing it all in that moment. I was just like, okay, well, this is what's happening. And it's not necessarily a case of like, we're going to solve all of these triggers and issues from our childhood and reparent ourselves perfectly within this amount of time. We've got all these different things that we have as our responsibility that aren't necessarily going to allow for it to be a quick process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, some of it needs to be step one for reparenting myself needs to be figuring out a way to notice when I'm triggered rather yeah. than just the automatic, let's go down the self-destruct, self-loathing route. That's really hard, trying to figure out and learn my own red flags. That sometimes they're really extreme and that's okay. I can, you know, when you're literally like shaking and you've gone pale and clammy and like all of that, okay, I can recognize that I have been triggered by something. But sometimes the inner voice is so subtly self-destructive that it's easy to listen to that voice and not kind of catch it. That's tricky. So yeah, learning that element of reparenting, and then I can at least, like you're saying, you can say, oh, there's a trigger, do I want to deal with that right now?
Yeah. What would you say out of like the work you've been doing, what would you say is the bits that are showing you those triggers in yourself, like bringing you back into that place of where you can notice them?
Definitely the bodily reactions. That's been really interesting to learn to check in, learn to notice that my shoulders are up, my head hurts, my tooth is throbbing, my heart rate's skyrocketed, I've gone really cold and shaky. I think to notice those things have been really, really helpful. As a starting point.
Yeah. I think that's really important to notice when your body shows you something.
What about you? What are your warning signs of triggered?
Being mean.
Okay.
Being mean, judgmental and mean. If I'm being judgmental and mean, it means I'm triggered.
And are you then being judgmental and mean about the situation or towards yourself or both?
Everyone. So first it will be the situation, then the people in the situation, then, oh God, you're such an awful person for saying those nasty things about
then
all the people.
Self-loathing.
Mm-hmm. So the trigger creates like the self-preservation. The self-preservation kicks in to like bash everybody around you. Yeah, because then you can't get hurt if you've got there first and hurt everybody else. And then once that has died down, then the self-deprecation comes in at that point. Oh, how could you have done and said all of those things? And
I literally written that down. I feel like that needs to be on the wall somewhere in my house. Of, oh, have you been triggered into figuring, trying to stay safe? Because that's the self-preservation, isn't it? Like that's, and if you can, certainly if I can maybe catch myself in that moment, that would be the dream. Like my inner parent can go, oh, you don't feel safe right now. What's going on? Why don't you feel safe? What can I do to help you? Rather than going, fuck it, let's push the self-destruct button in whatever capacity that might be. And then we don't need to go down the shame and blame and self-loathing route, because actually I caught myself at the self-preservation. And then there's a huge heap of compassion, isn't there, that can be given to yourself of, oh, you don't feel safe right now. Oh, you're just trying to be okay. All right, I get that. That's fair enough. That makes sense that you're upset about this thing.
I think you're going to get to that place a lot quicker than I will.
How do you feel about self-compassion?
How do I feel about compassion? Let's go there, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes I feel like I'm so compassionate. I'm like, oh, you really nailed that. You totally were empathetic and compassionate and like you, but it comes with judgment still. Okay, well, I'm going to be compassionate towards that person because X, Y, and Z.
Because they deserve it?
Yeah. Because right, in my right. head, like, that is a deserving reason to be compassionate. Whereas sometimes it's really hard to go there when I'm like, why do I need to be compassionate to them?
Hold on. I don't think that that's a bad thing, though.
No?
No, because, okay, so let's look at it from your children perspective. If you're... When you're parenting your children, in my opinion, as an expert at parenting, because I have four children and have watched a few Instagram reels, when you're parenting your children, they're all different and each situation needs something different, right? So one situation might need a, they're there, I'm going to be empathetic and compassionate, that really sucks, let's deal with this. And another situation might need to be a, something different that doesn't, isn't the softly, softly, touchy-feely, because you have to make a judgment, right? You have to say, this thing needs this and this thing needs this. Isn't that okay?
Maybe what you're saying is compassion doesn't need to necessarily look like, oh, right. How are you doing? Are you okay? Because that to me goes like, that does not feel good in my body. Whereas, okay, so how I like to parent my inner child is, okay, you're triggered. I get it. Like, that was shit. What happened to you? That was not cool. Like, that shouldn't have happened. Now, how should we move on?
How should we move on?
And that's always the thing in my head. I know that if I'm in a really, really bad place, I can't find the sentence, where should we move on? And if I'm in a really, really good place, or sorry, if I'm in any other place, so it's just a really bad place. If I'm in a really bad place and I'm very fortunate, I have not struggled with periods of depression in my life or any severe, what is classed under the terms of mental health. I don't think I have been in that kind of space ever. And I know that for me, the biggest tell if I would be heading that way is not knowing that there could be a space to move on to the next way of thinking.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that is such a big part of all of this, is we can have this intellectual conversation when we're in a fairly good place, and it's an intellectual conversation. We're not talking about it from a place of, right, you and I are both going, triggered!
Yeah.
How do we do that in the moments of triggers? And that's when you need it the most. And that's so hard. And so something I heard on a podcast the other day, it was someone saying they had it like almost, it was a running one, and it was a runner. And they had, when they go for a really hard race, they write on their hand, like, I think it was like WCIDRN, what can I do right now? And it's that in this moment, I'm feeling this thing, what can I do right this second? It doesn't need to impact tomorrow or whatever, but right now, what do I need right now? And that helped me a couple of times this weekend, of going, when I'm triggered, I get into the what ifs and I spiral into, if I do this thing, it's going to mean this, and it's going to mean this forever and ever, amen. I fucked everything up royally. And so there was one time this weekend when I managed to catch myself and I was like, oh, hold on. What can I do right now? Just do that thing.
What did you do right now?
I was really hungry. Like, I mean, when we're talking about parenting, it for me really is the basics of life at the moment. I was really hungry and I have one of my self-destruct buttons over the last couple of years has been about restriction of food and shutting down my need for food. And then if I'm hungry, I feel really out of control, and there's some really destructive self-destruct things that I'll do from there on in. But I did manage to catch myself the other day. I was like, I'm really hungry. And I can hear the what if noises coming. They're on their way to say, well, if you eat right now, you're never going to stop and you're never going to be able to run again and all the things. And I went, hold on. What can I do right now? I'm hungry. What's the obvious answer? Go have something to eat. The end.
What did you eat?
I think I had some toast. That's my go-to. I'm just like, eat toast. Yeah. And nothing bad happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That I have just been saying that to myself recently. What can I do right now?
And then because you had that moment, then today when you run, you can say, I ate and I still ran. Not my personal best today, but I still ran and I did a great time. It wasn't my worst. It wasn't my best. So that moment then didn't have a domino effect on anything else.
Exactly. Yeah. The domino effect didn't have the domino effect.
Yeah. That's definitely key for me as well in parenting, especially with that many kids. If I don't notice something come up, Gary and I said this yesterday, actually, that neither of us are good when we're hangry. And he's only just started to recognize that feeling. I don't think he's ever been in tune with that feeling. But now after 12 years of me basically telling him, you're just hungry, eat something.
Just eat something.
Because I think he maybe had very set meal times or whatever at home. Like he wasn't, I don't know. I haven't really discussed it with him, but if neither of us catch that feeling and we're all hangry at the same time, and our kids struggle with it too, not all of them, but a couple of them, and then we're all hangry, it's like, oh, we all just needed to eat lunch quicker than what we did. So yesterday, I know when we stood watching football, it's cold, it's a bit miserable sometimes, the kids are gonna be running around. I'm like, I'm just gonna go to Greg's and buy a load of donuts. It's Sunday. It's like, you know, because part of my head goes, the what ifs go, they're all going to be fat. You're going to poison your kids with all that sugar. How dare you give them donuts? You know how bad it is. Like kids today are all obese and this is blah, blah, blah. And then like all the stuff's going through my head. I'm like, it's just a donut. They're going to run around all morning and it means that they're not going to cry and they're not going to whine and they're not going to like bug you for the whole hour. They're just going to eat their donut, drink their Capri Sun and fuck off and play. Rather than stand next to you and ask you for 20 snacks. So then again, instead of going down the rabbit hole of right, no, don't buy that, go in the shop and buy really expensive fruit that then like they probably won't eat it and blah blah blah. Yeah, I'm not saying my kids don't eat fruit, but on a freezing cold Sunday morning in a field, I don't necessarily think that's the snack of choice, is it? So yeah, we bought donuts and everyone ate them and everything was fine, no one was hangry.
Yeah It's okay to trust that little voice that goes, actually, I do know what to do. And the answer is probably have a donut.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I think in the past, I would have just got one for myself out of habit. So what I really wanted was a coffee. I wanted to stand and watch the football with a hot drink. And I wanted a latte. We know that I love a latte. So I was like, I'm going to have a latte. Unfortunately, it was a Greg's one. Beggars can't be choosers. There was no artisan freaking coffee shop near the school that we had the football match in. But I was like, do you know, I'm not going to buy a donut. I don't want it. I think I want it. But actually what I really want is my coffee and all the kids need the donut. So instead of like stuffing a load of sugary carbs in my face, which obviously I did today, but didn't do yesterday. So bonus points to me. I think, because in the past as well, that thing of like, that's sometimes where for me, the traumatic bits of motherhood kick in and it goes, you need to treat yourself with that donut because your life is hard with these four kids. Like you need to eat, but actually, is that a treat for me? Am I treating myself by buying myself the donut? That's just conditioning telling me that I need to treat myself from the life that I have chosen to live. No, what I actually really want, what's going to nourish my body right now is my latte and I want it. So I did it and it felt good.
I mean, I celebrate the latte. That sounds amazing. And I think it's so interesting. I deserve the treat because of the suffering that I am enduring, standing in the car. And it's like, again, there's conditions of you treating yourself to something that you want because you deserve something. Like this whole, everything has a condition, be it, you deserve to suffer because of, or you deserve to have this thing because of. It's like, oh, wow, there's so much like emotional load on a donut.
Mm.
Oof.
So can I tell the story of my weekend struggles?
Yeah,
because this
yeah,
has been like an ongoing
conversation. Absolutely.
Okay, so for maybe like 6 months or so, I've been having, maybe longer, I don't know, I lose track of time because I live in very much in the moment a lot of the time, so I don't know how long I've been moaning about stuff. Sorry, everyone has to listen to my Friday night moans, but Friday night, Saturday morning through to most of Saturday have been a trigger for me for like a long time. I feel like Friday night comes, the world tells you that it's Friday night. People send you texts saying, happy Friday. I'm like, why? It's just a day. And so immediately the trigger comes as soon as it's like, oh, it's happy Friday. I'm like, well, what the fuck makes it happy about today? I don't get it. Like, I mean, my job.
Fuck you, Friday.
Right? I'm like, let's celebrate Mondays because that's the day when I drop off all my kids and I record this podcast. So I'm like, happy Monday, everyone. And everyone out there's like, what the hell is wrong with you? I'm like, we can all have different days in the week that feel good. And I get that most people have a day, which is Friday and Saturday, generally, that they love because their office is a bit more quiet. They probably have like a little treat on, you know, for lunch because it's a Friday. They probably then come home to start a day of something different the next day. But all the mothers out there that are like stay-at-home mothers that don't leave their kids very often know that Friday to Saturday is exactly the same. It is exactly the same. Other than having to drop your kids off at school, it's exactly the same. So the trigger comes and I'm like, what the hell is this? And so for months and months and months, I've been like battling this, like, why am I so fucking miserable? And this has probably started when Ivy started football on a Saturday, because it was very much a Gary idea that I was on board with, because I, in theory, I was on board with it because I wanted her to have a sport that she loved. I want my kids to be as active as they can be and want to be. And it seemed like a great idea until all the football mums out there know it becomes a whole weekend activity. You think it's just a Saturday morning, and then it's, you know this too because your kids also play football, and then it's a whole weekend. It's a Saturday morning training and then it's a Sunday game, and we only have one car. So in my head that was like, now you're trapped every single weekend. You're trapped in the house. You've got no hope of anything good for yourself because you're trapped in the house and there's no hope. And I got myself in that space, and I've been looping around it for months and months and months and months and months. And suddenly I just decided to join in.
Oh, yay.
And now I'm like, oh, I've joined in, and actually my conversations with Gary are better. My conversations with Ivy are better and more easeful on those 2 days. I'm getting fresh air. I got my latte, and my other kids have other kids to play with, and they don't just want me to entertain them. Like, why did it take you so long to find the solution to this trigger? Why? Like, sometimes I get so frustrated with myself that I can't see the wood for the trees when the answer is so simple.
I mean, I hear you, because that was literally the pattern we went through as well. And then we did exactly the same of, yeah, figuring out, well, let's all join in. And then we've come full circle to now people aren't joining in because Bethany's old enough to look after Anna when it's a home game, because you can see our house from the football pitch. So actually what happened this weekend for us was Bethany stayed at home with Anna whilst Luke played football. Samuel, me and CJ went over to watch Luke. And then just before the end of the game, Bethany and Anna came over so they could get a bacon roll at the club. It was amazing. Yeah, why can't we see the wood for the trees? So for me, when I get into a space of trigger and I can't see the solution, it's normally because my defense mechanisms, which then become a bit egocentric, come up. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to give in, and I'm not going to go down the easy route, and I'm not going to change my mind because my mind is telling me I need to do this thing, which is super important. And actually, if I just get out of my own way sometimes and put the ego to one side, like, for example, the run today, if I just slowed down a bit and left my ego at the door, I would have probably felt a whole lot better than I did. But I can't, because the trigger is going, come on, let's get ego on board. Ego will protect you.
Yeah, because my trigger told me that, because if I join in with all these activities, I won't get to do the things I want to do, which is like roast my chicken, because I like to roast a chicken on a weekend and bake something and blah, 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 blah. And then there's the part of, by the way, I did manage to still roast the chicken. I just roasted it on the Saturday, not the Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, like it really wasn't that hard to rewire. But for some reason, my brain just couldn't. It was my brain that couldn't get my heart and my soul knew that there was a better way of doing this. Like, otherwise, for me, I think if that wasn't true, the trigger would have just died away, yeah, like, and not been that relevant. But this was like a really big relevant moment for my family, in that I put aside my ego, like you said, and putting my needs right at the top of the pile. And actually, by doing that, my needs were all still met. I didn't feel by the end of the weekend that I hadn't had my socializing time, because I chatted to the mums on the side of the pitch. I hadn't felt like I hadn't connected with my family, because we had the time in the car on the way there and the time in the car on the way back all together, where we chatted about the game and other things. And it was like, oh, this, by being just that teeny tiny bit selfless, I guess. Is it selfless? No. By releasing control and attachment to how I believe a weekend should look, because my upbringing was not football weekends. I was not, you know, but clearly there was something about how I spent weekends as a child that didn't sit well in my body. And now I'm going to redefine it in my family.
And is it, I mean, I'm throwing this out there, I don't know if this is true for you or not, but is there also an element of what you were saying earlier on of, if there's a male dominated thing, your whole being goes, uh-uh. And even though it's Ivy playing in a girls' league, football is a very male thing still, I would say, the stereotype of it. And then you kind of have to give up your weekend for what is a boy sport in your, you know, that's how, yeah, I would see football from a childish perspective. Like, it's not a girl, you know, my boys play football, the girls don't want to. There's still that kind of divide.
I don't think it's that. I think, yes, it's the male thing, but not the sport, but Gary. Yeah. By, okay, Gary deciding how we're going to spend the weekend. That's me. Okay. And it's not really Gary. It's like he's a coach on their team and he enjoys it with her and they chat about it and they have that connection now and that bond around it, which I really wanted them to have. And then once they got it, was like, don't think I like that. And that's, you know, yeah, and I love it.
Yeah.
But my instant response was, danger, you're going to lose your connection with your kid. They're going to do that by themselves and you're going to miss out and it's all going to be la, 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 la.
And that the man is taking the lead,
yeah,
which for you is a trigger. It's a no, we're not having male dominance here. We're having the opposite of that. And actually it's a case of going, well, hold on, okay, that's a trigger for me. But actually, is that trigger saying we're unsafe? Is that right in this situation? Is that actually the truth of what's happening? And maybe that's not the truth. I did that the other day. I had a trigger around food and control again. And I literally got a piece of paper out, put a line through the middle of it and went, here's what my trigger is saying and here's the reality of the situation, and they don't match. My fear is unfounded. Like, the truth is completely different and there are truths in this situation, and the truth for you is that Gary is having a relationship with Ivy and she's playing football. That's it. That's all it is. Amazing. Yeah, not that he's being male dominant or because it's a boy thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of the issues that we have had in the past between each other have been massively related to my unbending stubbornness about not being overpowered by any man ever again.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I think, like, how we shouldn't shit on the voice that says let's keep safe, right? Like, there's a reason why we are triggered and there's work that needs to be done to keep us safe that's really important. And that is, again, that element of reparenting and that compassion that needs to come in and go, hold on, there's a damn good reason why we're here. She's only trying to keep you safe. That, yes. Yeah.
And also that, you know, the extreme one way or the other is not going to help you with more ease in the middle. So me excluding all men from my life in every single way is not going to make me feel more peaceful and easeful with everything I'm doing as much as allowing them to take over everything in my life. And for me, that's one context. That's men, right? There's other things that trigger me.
Yeah.
We're just talking about it in this particular sense, but whatever the trigger is, it's not going to be solved by completely yielding yourself to it, or by fighting it. It's that.
Yeah. And so that's really interesting, because I think my quick reaction, my triggered reaction, is to do exactly that, is to go down the extreme road of, well, it's one thing or the other. So I'm either going to be super, 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 super skinny and never eat properly ever again, or I'm going to be obese. There's no middle ground for me. It's like one or the other. And that's how it feels when I'm triggered around food. Yeah.
And so how does it feel? Okay, so that's when you're triggered. And so how do we feel then when we're in like a place where we can recognize the trigger? For me, that looks like, okay, now that I'm in this space, I can see what the trigger was doing to my psyche. So therefore, I try now not to make any big decisions when I know that I'm not in the space of being able to see the trigger. If I'm in the trigger, like if I'm in that zone of like dysregulation, whatever, that is not a good time to make a big decision. It is a good time to make a decision, like, shall I eat or not? But like, I'm talking about, you know, often my brain goes to, right, well, I'll just leave Gary. That's it. I'm out. Yeah. This is too hard. Yeah. Like, let's just leave. That's going to solve all my problems.
Yeah. It's just the extreme answer. Yeah. That's the quick solve. Just divorce. I've heard that's really easy.
Jesus, it's so hard. It's so hard. Yeah. So, you know, there's that thing, isn't it, of like, how can we bring ourselves back to that space of peacefulness enough to be able to see the wood for the trees a tiny bit before we can say, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that or whatever?
Yeah. And I think that's where I'm kind of going, what can I do right now? That instant moment of, okay, I'm triggered, what can I do right now? And that's that question that you said of how should we move on? It's that microsecond of catching it, isn't it, then? But that's really hard to always be able to do that.
Because there's also that like train of thought where people say about sitting in the space, which is, I think this is where lots of what you come across as far as literature goes, you really have to put it through your filtration system, because this whole like sitting and, I was going to say the word wallowing, and that's my judgment. Okay, there's the sitting within.
This is a safe space for your judgment. Thanks. I think it's safe.
And maybe wallowing is the wrong word. Okay, I do enjoy wallowing for a very limited space of time. My wallowing time is limited to as long as I can muster the strength to stay there, because for me, staying and wallowing takes more energy than moving on. So that's the way I work. And that doesn't mean though that there's not a space for people who do want to sit in the emotion or sit there for longer, to dive right down to the deep depths of the bottom of it and then come up to the massive highs at the top. I don't think that that's a bad thing if you're that kind of person, but often the literature says, or the Instagram whatever say, like, just sit in this space for as long as you need. Well, some people are going to need less time in it than others.
I will also say that often, okay, so because of my issues around food, when my kids ask me for a snack, I'm triggered. I don't have time to now go and sit down and wallow, because I love a wallow. I'm right on board with victimhood and wallowing. Like, get me there. That's my preferred place to be. And in fact, this weekend, something happened and I didn't go to victimhood. And I was like so fucking proud of myself, like so proud that I told CJ that I was proud because I'd done this thing. Like,
good.
Now validated, yes, for not being a victimhood. But yay. But so I think the whole sitting in those feelings doesn't necessarily work when you've got kids or multiple kids or young kids or babies or just a job or whatever it is that's going on. Like, I don't have the luxury of saying, hold on, Samuel, I can't figure out what snack you can have right now because I'm triggered. I have to say, and I did do this the other day when Anna was throwing a strop, what can I do right now? So in this split second moment, I notice that she's asking for something, or she's dysregulated. Now I'm dysregulated. And so then instantly the what ifs are coming. If I deal with her in this way, this is going to blah, blah, blah. Okay, shut up that voice. What can I do right now in this situation with the person or the situation in front of me? That's all I have. And I'm not very good at doing that. But that to me is the only answer, is to come back to the present moment and say, here and now is all that matters. And that's another big trigger. Like, that's a self-preservation thing for me. That's exactly what kind of led me and CJ to that conversation of, it actually, my trauma says you're not safe in your own body. You aren't safe right now unless, and this is taking us back to all the conditioning stuff, you are only safe, you're only worthy, you're only lovable if you are perfect at all times. Well, when you're triggered, you aren't being perfect. Okay, so yeah, what can I do right now? I'm going to get it tattooed to my head.
Maybe a badge.
A badge. I need a t-shirt, honestly, yeah. And then the other things that I have started doing, and actually the other night when something happened and I text you and Dawn and went, those things happened. And which one of you said, go do some colouring? Like, basically, Dawn. Yeah, I think for me, that's part, like, it's go do something that takes you back to your body in this moment. And for me, I've discovered that's colouring or like drawing. Again, you can't necessarily do that when you're triggered, when you're trying to deal with your kids. Oh, hold on, kids. I'm getting my pens out. Let me draw it out, guys. But like, that would, you know, those kind of things of trying to go back to my body, and maybe even that, what can I do right now? Okay, well, hold on, quick body scan. That would be the ideal, wouldn't it? Like, how? Okay.
Yeah, but you can say to them, which I often say to Fern and other of my children, mummy's getting very angry right now, so I'm going to go and take a deep breath. And I normally say it that right. voice, or maybe even more forcefully. And then, you know, the deep breath doesn't always happen. So I'm like, nope, I really am going to go and take a deep breath now.
Yeah.
Because they see me trying to regulate myself. And I, you know, a wise woman once said to me that they test the limits with you at home to see where your upper limit is, because it's better they do it there than they do it outside of the home, because yeah, you're the safe place to
you
do it.
You are safe. Yeah, totally.
But that doesn't necessarily, well, I hope I'm safe. And that's some of the fear, right? That's the fear, not the, that's the conditioning. That's the fear. That's not the actual truth. I know I'm safe deep down, but there's a part of me that wonders, am I am safe for my kids? Like, am I a safe space for them? Am I doing the right things or whatever? So them seeing me work through all of that is, you know, important and relevant to how they're then going to learn how to regulate themselves. The same way that whatever experiences we had in our childhood is now teaching us things about how we want to be in this parental role. You know, the things that weren't great and the things that were really bad, and then the things that were okay. And like, there's certain, and even, you know, it's very rare to have someone who had only shit things happen in their childhood. There are some people who that is true for, but even just, you can build on anything where you're reparenting in a positive way as well. So you can pick one thing you did with a parental figure that you loved and recreate it with your own kids. And that can, sometimes we focus so much on the awful things, trying to make them better, and forget that we have all the other things that we can draw on. The reason why we're good at certain things has come from, you know, a past that we had.
Yeah, I really resonate with that, actually. One of the things that instantly came to my mind was baking with my mum. She is an incredible cook, an incredible baker, and I learned all my cake decorating from her. That's what she did. She made cakes for people. And when I was old enough, I got to help her. I used to sit and make things with her and dye all of the food. You know, I used to do the job that now Bethany does, which is to colour all the fondant, because I could do that. Like, they were treasured memories for me. And now I have absolutely passed that on to Bethany.
Who is now passing it on to my kids in the sisterhood, right? Because that's the thing.
Sisterhood.
I'm not going to teach them that. My mum decorates cakes, but she's not professionally. And my passion is not decorating. So Bethany is now passing that skill through the new way of being as sisters with each other. And that's progress. Like, we have to celebrate that. As much as our triggers are still bringing up all this stuff that we want to work on and whatever, like, that's really important to me.
But I think also the other thing that comes up for me is within the ability to celebrate the good, it's also to say that the bad, I let go of blame. There's no space where we talk about self-compassion and seeing ourselves as worthy of love. In that space, then there's no place for blame anymore. There's no place for me to kind of hit the self-destruct button and self-loathing. And there's also no place for me to look back on my own childhood that's bringing up these triggers and blah, 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 that whole story, and go, and I'm going to need to really externalize it and shit on it and blame the players in all of that. I let go of that and say, that's not the important thing here. The important thing is just saying, there's some triggers and they're impacting my what can I do right now moment.
Yeah, those things have happened. They are there. They are like demarcated inside my body and they come up to show me, but they have passed. Those moments have passed. They're not moments I have to keep reliving as much as my body wants me to. Doesn't mean that I have to keep reliving them.
That's so interesting, because actually my learning on trauma has been essentially when you're triggered, your body is literally doing the repeat of what it was in the first place that caused you to feel like that. And so there may be an element of healing for me would be to not keep repeating that bodily reaction to whatever it is that's triggered the memory of the past. Because then I ask myself, but what can I do right now? Because then I can say, so the thing that you're triggered about, the thing that you're worrying is happening again, isn't happening. Because that's not the situation I'm in right now. Because when I'm asking, what can I do right now? I'm bringing myself back here to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds ideal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I normally feel pretty zen after a long run. Mondays are my favorite day because I get to go for a long run and then I get to have this conversation. I'm like, I feel so zen because I'm so tired and all I can think is like zen thoughts. Just you wait until I finish the school run this afternoon and I'm fucking starving. All the kids are angry because I bought Anna hummus and breadsticks for her snack and she's not going to be happy. Oh God.
Yep. It's all zen till you embark on that 3-hour stretch between.
Yeah, and it's not even going to be 3 hours tonight. It's going to be longer because it's school run. The big ones have got STEM clubs, so I'm going to have to try and get them from STEM via CJ. Then Anna's got to deal with her snack time. And then the boys have got training at 6. So I need to make dinner early, which is 3 different variations on a thing. Oh, shit, I forgot to buy peas as well. Bollocks.
Let's just enjoy this zen moment then.
What can I do right now? Oh God.
Enjoy this. We're gonna make a cup of tea. That's all we could do now. Have I got time? I can have a quick cup of tea before the school run and that'll be the moment.
Yeah. We're so healed during these podcasts. And then we get triggered again. So anybody listening to this, those 39 to 70 people that listen every single week, I love you and thank you. We're zen here. It all hits the fan later. Don't you think that we got it all together?
Oh, no. I think that's a really important point. This is a moment in time captured and recorded, and then the next moment in time might be totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all cool. And we're and I think that's so nice, isn't it, that we can have these conversations and then something will hit the fan later and we'll just text each other and go, well, I'm drinking wine.
I'm not drinking wine. I drank too much wine this weekend.
You were hungover today. Well, I sent you a text on Friday going, conscious numbing, here I come. Yeah. I did. I mean, so Friday night, it was wonderful, actually, in the end. CJ made guacamole and we had a big bag of Doritos nachos and there was some nice yogurt and I drank gin and lemon and gingergrass mix and watched Star Trek. Until I felt very ill.
Then you went to bed like the old lady you are.
I stood up and like went, oh my God, I look 6 months pregnant, and kind of hobbled to bed.
Yeah. Oh God.
It's great.
The problem with excess is if you get past a certain point where you've been like parenting for so long and you're not used to it anymore, or whatever reason, you then like do some excesses and go, why did I used to enjoy this feeling?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like me and my carb fest today. Like I used to revel in a carb fest and now I'm just like, oh God, my body is not telling me that I've done a good thing. I'm going to need to drink loads more caffeine now to counteract the carb fest that I've just had.
Oh. Yeah. But yay, carbs. Carbs are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe do some exercise with it though.
Yeah.
It does help.
Oh, that was a good chat. I feel quite emotional about all the things at the moment.
Bye! Just a little note to end the podcast to say, I'm super aware that we don't have a proper introduction to each episode, like a hi kind of thing, hi, welcome, and we don't have an outro, is that even the word, to our episodes ever. Like, we just kind of end them. I'm aware of that. Maybe we'll fix that, maybe we won't, maybe it's a problem that needs fixing, I don't know. But anyway, just to say thanks. We love doing this and we're so grateful that you listen. Like, genuinely, thank you.